नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Chapter 18, text number 39. Chapter 18 entitled Parikshit Curse by Brahmana Boy. Sava Angiraso Brahman Shutva Sutta Vilapanam Unmilyashanakai Netre Trishva Chamse Mito Garagam Saha, he, why, also, Angirasha, the Rishi born in the family of Angira, Brahman, O Shanaka, Shrutva, on hearing, Sutta, his son, Vilapanam, crying in distress, Unmilya, opening, Shanakai, gradually, Netre, by the eyes, Trishva, by seeing, Cha, also, Amse, on the shoulder, Mrita, dead, Uragam, snake. Translation by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. O Brahmanas, the Rishi who was born in the family of Angira Muni, hearing his son crying, gradually opened his eyes and saw the dead snake around his neck. There's no purport, so I'll go to text 40. Visrijyatam cha papricha vatsa kasma dhiro dishi kena vate apakritam iti yuktasa neavvedayat. Translation. He threw the dead snake aside and asked his son why he was crying, whether anyone had done him harm. On hearing this, the son explained to him what had happened. Purport. The father did not take the dead snake on his neck very seriously. He simply threw it away. Actually, there was nothing seriously wrong in Maharaj Parikshit's act. But the foolish son took it very seriously. And being influenced by Kali, he cursed the king and thus ended a chapter of happy history. Text 41. Nishamya shaptam atad arham narendram sabrahmano nat majam abhyan Abhyanandat Aho Batam Ho Mahat Adhyate Kritam Alpiyasi Droha Urur Damodhritaha. Translation, text 41. The father heard from his son that the king had been cursed, although he should never have been condemned, for he was the best amongst all human beings. The Rishi did not congratulate his son, but on the contrary began to repent, saying, "Alas, what a great sinful act was performed by my son. He was awarded heavy punishment for an insignificant offense." Purport. The king is the best of all human beings. He is the representative of God, and he is never to be condemned for any of his actions. In other words, the king can do no wrong. The king may order hanging of a culprit son of a brahmana, but he does not become sinful for killing a brahmana. Even if there is something wrong with the king, he is never to be condemned. A medical practitioner may kill a patient by mistaken treatment, but such a killer is never condemned to death. So what to speak of a good and pious king like Maharaj Parikshit? In the Vedic way of life, the king is trained to become a Rajarshi or a great saint, although he is ruling as king. It is the duty only by whose government the citizens can live peacefully and without any fear. The Rajarshis would manage the kingdom so nicely and piously that the subjects would respect them as if they were the Lord. That is the instruction of the Vedas. The king is called Narendra, or the best amongst the human beings. How then could a king like Maharaj Parikshit be condemned by an inexperienced, puffed up son of a brahmana, even though he had attained the powers of a qualified brahmana? Since Shamika Rishi was an experienced, good brahmana, he did not approve of the actions of his condemned son. He began to lament for all that his son had done. The king was beyond the jurisdiction of curses as a general rule, and what to speak of a good king like Maharaj Parikshit? The offense of the king was most insignificant, and his being condemned to death was certainly a very great sin for Sringi. Therefore, Rishi Shamika regretted the whole incident. Om Jnana Timirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurunmrutam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Mukham Karoti Vachalam Pangum Nangayate Kirim Yat Kripatamaham Vande Shri Guru Vinatarinam Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasati Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So here in this section of verses, so we are reading about how Sringi, he has cursed Maharaj Parikshit, and then he went to his father's hermitage and he regretted the incident and he started crying very loudly, and that crying made his father come out of the trance he was in, and then he saw this dead snake around his neck and he just threw it off. So here, and then we hear from the father of Sringi that how he's regretting the whole incident. So we know how Maharaj Parikshit, when he was one time he was out there hunting in the forest, and he became very hungry and he became extremely fatigued. So he was very fatigued and hungry and thirsty, and this was also quite it wasn't an ordinary thing, because he was a king, very powerful person, very strong person, but somehow by the arrangement of God it happened. And then he was looking for a place where he can quench his thirst, and he happened to come to the hermitage of this famous sage, Shamika Rishi. And when he reached there, he saw the sage sitting in the hut, who was in trance. His eyes were closed and he was in perfect meditation. So, and then because he was so thirsty and hungry, he asked the sage for, you know, some water, for maybe a glass of water. And as we heard, about the laws of reception in the previous verses. So the laws of reception enjoin that even if an enemy comes to your house, the enemy should be treated very nicely, like a friend. So what to speak of a neutral person or a friend coming to your place? So and moreover, Parikshit was the king, he was the emperor. So the emperor is meant to be received very nicely. And he wasn't an ordinary emperor, but he was a Rajarshi. So he was the representative of God. In other words, someone can only be a representative of God if he's a devotee. Otherwise, why will that person represent God? So the whole idea is to propagate God consciousness. So Maharaj Parikshit was not in wrong in asking Shamika Rishi for a glass of water. So we heard that the basic deception one should offer is, and it's just good manners, that one should offer a place to sit, maybe a mat or a cushion, or depending on one's ability, and a glass of water and some sweet words. So this is just the bare minimum. So, but depending on one's means, one can do more. But even this bare minimum was not offered to Maharaj Parikshit. So that wasn't right. And even Maharaj Parikshit's getting angry and envious, that was unprecedented. Because he's a great devotee of the Lord. And Maharaj Parikshit, he had been through much worse. If you know the history of Maharaj Parikshit, when he was in the womb, there was a Brahmastra which was targeted to him, thrown by Ashwathama. So a Brahmastra is a very, very powerful weapon. It can destroy the whole universe, you know, and it can be a targeted weapon also. So, and the heat of the Brahmastra weapon is very, very intense. So when the Brahmastra was fired at Maharaj Parikshit, he was in the womb and there was this intense heat. And he was tolerating it, and then Vishnu, he, by his omnipotency, went in the womb and saved him. So Maharaj Parikshit had been through much worse. So his becoming angry and envious at the sage was quite unprecedented. So ordinarily a devotee, especially an advanced devotee like that, wouldn't be so affected by that. They would tolerate that. But again, it was by the will of the Lord. Shamika Rishi was in trance and he got hungry and thirsty and was fatigued. So all this was, we also have to see, it's the higher arrangement of the Lord so that this Srimad Bhagavatam could be spoken. Just like for the Bhagavad Gita to be spoken, this battle of Kurukshetra was arranged by the will of the Lord. So there was this higher arrangement. So Bhagavad Gita could be spoken at the right time. And for the benefit of mankind. So in the same way, this was all the arrangement, so Srimad Bhagavatam, so Parikshit Maharaj could go back to Godhead. So Krishna wanted him to go back to Godhead. So and Parikshit Maharaj took it externally, like he saw it, this is an arrangement for me to become detached from affairs of the state and worldly affairs, so I can absorb myself fully in Krishna consciousness. And also Srimad Bhagavatam gets spoken, and Srimad Bhagavatam is the spotless Purana. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he glorified Srimad Bhagavatam a lot and advised that if you want to make advancement, we should study the Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam. So this is all for our benefit. And you know, and Parikshit Maharaj had a right to ask for a glass of water. So in the Vedic times, the king had a right to demand 1/5 of the farm animals of the citizens. So generally the brahmanas were not subject to the king's wealth. The vaishyas, they would be subject to the king's wealth by the king. So the king had a right to ask for 1/5 of the, you know, the animals, 1/10 of one's grains. So this was like the tax you have to pay. You can have to pay 1/10. You have to give 1/10 of your grains. 1/4 of one's merits. And the king is also entitled to 1/6 of the sins performed by his praja. And also 1/6 of the income. So the king had a right to these things. So 1/6 of the good and the bad. And 1/6 of, so there was nothing wrong in Maharaj Parikshit just asking for a glass of water. So that was, you know, it's not even mentioned here. So that's just the just basic etiquette and the laws of reception. But we saw that how Sringi, because he was an immature brahmana. Then we see how Sringi, because of his immaturity, in other words, he lacked culture. So it's mentioned that Sringi, though he had the Brahminical powers and though he had the Brahminical training, but because he lacked in culture, he could not apply all of that, and he wrongly cursed Maharaj Parikshit. In fact, he committed an offense. And this gave Kali an opportunity to infiltrate the society, because as we understand, Kali could not, Maharaj Parikshit gave Kali five places to reside, wherever there's illicit sex, meat eating, intoxication and gambling, and also wherever there's, you know, gold or hoarding of gold. So those places Kali could reside, but Kali could hardly find any such places because of Parikshit Maharaj's good governance. And because of Parikshit Maharaj's good governance, even a Brahmana boy like Sringi could become so powerful. But because he lacked culture, and this was also again by the arrangement of the Lord, it was the will of the Lord. And then Kali took that opportunity to infiltrate. And Kali Yuga had to, the onset of Kali Yuga had to come, because this is the age of Kali. So Kali Yuga had to enter. So therefore we see Vaishnava culture and etiquette is very important. Though we might have the training and maybe even the power, but the culture is very, very important. How we deal with each other, how we, as devotees, we are dealings amongst each other, and not only as amongst devotees, but even with the society, how we deal with each other. So of course we can see Sringi had the training, but the Brahmanas in Kali Yuga, generally speaking, they don't even have the training. They simply claim to be Brahmanas by birthright. So Sringi was also, you know, more or less doing that. He was saying, you know, I'm a Brahmana, and therefore I'm superior to you. Who, and you Parikshit, you're a Kshatriya. And he said, he outrightly said that you're a watchdog. And Prabhupada mentioned in the purport, yes, the Kshatriya is the watchdog in the sense he is performing that duty of giving protection. But for him to be called a watchdog is an insult. So, and he said, you know, you're a watchdog and a crow, therefore dogs are not meant to come inside the house and dine with the master. So he said, okay, the Brahmanas are the masters and the Kshatriya are the watchdogs, so it can't sit on the same table. Of course, in today's society, people sleep with their dogs. Some people, they sleep with their dogs. Dogs are allowed to enter into the house, and maybe in the future they might even dine with the, you know, might eat from the same plate, who knows. But at least in a civilized society, dogs don't enter the house and they don't dine. So Sringi compared Maharaj Parikshit to a dog and said, you know, he cannot come inside. So that was a great insult. But we see Parikshit was a devotee. So as we have heard in the last few days, there is Daiva Varnashram, but in Daiva Varnashram everyone is equal, whether one is a Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya or Shudra. So everyone is to be treated equally, because everyone is a devotee. So that's the common factor. Everyone is a devotee, but everyone has different propensities according to the modes of nature. Therefore, some people act as Brahmanas, some act as Kshatriyas, Vaishyas and Shudras. But the higher principle is that everyone is a devotee. So no one is higher, no one is lower. Everyone is equal. So, but because Sringi thought he's higher, he's a Brahmana, and what he didn't realize was that, you know, Maharaj Parikshit is also a great devotee. He's as good as his father. And he's a Rajarshi, he's a king. And the Srimad Bhagavatam was spoken to him. So he's obviously a very great devotee. And even let's look at Maharaj Parikshit's lineage, you know, the Pandavas. So he is a very great devotee. So he overlooked all of that and he just thought, you know, I'm a Brahmana and therefore I'm superior. And he had the audacity to curse Maharaj Parikshit. And it's also mentioned in the previous text that he took up like the responsibility of Krishna. You know, he said, you know, Krishna, our master, has gone away has departed. Therefore, there's no one to protect us. Therefore, I will take this responsibility and curse Maharaj Parikshit. So yes, you know, Brahmanas are important. Brahmanical culture is very important. In fact, Brahmanical culture is favored by Krishna. Namo Brahmana, ko Brahmana hitaya cha. So Krishna upholds Brahmanical culture because Brahmanical culture is the very basis of progress of human society. So the progress of human society is based on Brahmanas, it is based on cows, and it is based on God consciousness. So any society which is devoid of these things is a condemned society, and it's progressing towards, you know, hellish conditions. It's not going upwards, it's going downwards. Of course, today people think we are progressing a lot, technology is advancing, you know, communication is advancing, and we have made so much progress. But that's not real progress. So real progress is progress in Brahmanical culture. So when there is Brahmanical culture, then the people have a chance to obtain real knowledge. So real knowledge means knowledge of transcendence, basically. That's real knowledge. So, you know, sama, dhamma, saucham, tapa, shantir, arjavam. So truthfulness, cleanliness, austerity, you know, the qualities of Brahmanas, they are basically meant to support God consciousness. So therefore, you know, Brahmanas are very much required in society. There is a great need of them because the Brahmanas are the head of society. So they have to guide the rest of society. They have to guide the kings, the leaders. And they have to propagate Krishna consciousness. So the pinnacle of Brahmanism is Vaishnavism. So Vaishnavism, in other words, is a PhD Brahmana. So ordinarily, Brahmanas, they come to the understanding that the absolute truth is Brahman or impersonal. But when a Brahmana is more advanced, is a PhD or is mature, then they will understand that the absolute truth is a person, the Bhagavan aspect. So, you know, if we read Srimad Bhagavatam and other books, generally the word Vaishnava is not mentioned so much in the translation. We read more about Brahmanas mentioned. But that generally refers to mature Brahmanas, in other words, Vaishnavas. So a Vaishnava is a Brahmana automatically. And we can see that this mentality of Brahmanas being superior has destroyed India, if you look historically, and even today. And that's what the caste system is. So the caste system is the Brahmanas, they have placed themselves higher than everyone else in order to, for various reasons, in order to gain respect, profit, adoration, distinction, control, power, and so forth, and facilities or whatever. So basically control. You know. And that's what happened to Sringi also. Sringi was puffed up. And even during the time of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, this problem was very prominent in society. In fact, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, through his writings, he basically proved that one cannot be a Brahmana by birth. So in order to be a Brahmana, one has to have the guna and the karma. So one has to have the qualities and one has to act according to those qualities, then one is a Brahmana. So in his various teachings and his books, he made those points. And that enraged the caste Goswamis, the Prakrita Sahajiyas and the Brahmanas. So they were very much against it. And there were so many, especially in Bengal, there were so many Sahajiya sects like Aul, Baul, Karta Bhaja, Neda Nedi, Daravesha. Then Prabhupada also mentioned the Nectar Devotion, the Nityananda Vamshas. Yeah. So there were so many. And, you know, this problem is not there, you know, time of Sringi, but, you know, even today, and even going back a few hundred years ago, this problem was there. And you can see that's how Kali infiltrated. So what Kali's plan was, very strategic. Okay, first, let's attack the head. The head is the Brahmanas. So they became proud. So the head will then destroy the rest of the body. That was the plan of Kali. So the head destroyed the arms, the Kshatriyas, and then everyone else. And then what happened is, then everyone attacked the head. The rest of the body attacked the head. So because, and then people said, okay, you people are not qualified. You're just saying you're Brahmanas. And people can see they're really not qualified. They're puffed up. So then Brahmanical culture is rejected. Brahmanical culture became rejected. So in this way then, Kali infiltrated everywhere. So that Kali was very successful in his plan. So Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he launched a severe attack against all these religious sects. And Saraswati Thakur was called the Lion Guru. So he was so powerful in his preaching that all the Mayavadis and all these bogus Brahmanas, they were afraid of him. As mentioned, that Siddhanta Saraswati, he was deeply grieved to see all these groups of Prakriti Sahajiyas in the garb of Paramahamsa Goswami Gurus misleading the people. So thus he completely disassociated himself and he resorted to performing bhajan in solitude. So when Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj was performing bhajan in solitude, so one time Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, along with the six Goswamis, they manifested in his vision, and they told him that, do not be disheartened. Take up the task of re-establishing Varnashram with new vigor and preach the message of love of Krishna everywhere. So after he had this vision, then Saraswati Thakur, he was filled with great enthusiasm to preach Lord Chaitanya's message. And we also know the famous pastime, how in 1911, when his father, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, was very ill, there was basically a challenge to the Vaishnavas by the so-called Brahmanas. They organized a conference, a three-day conference, where Brahmanas from all over India came, and there was going to be a debate on Brahmanism and Vaishnavism. And there, Bhaktivinoda Thakur could not go because he was so ill. So then Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj went in place of him. And before he went, he presented an essay to his father. It's called, Brahmanism and Vaishnavism. So, and when the Thakur, he read this essay, he was so pleased. And he said, yes, you're the right person. And then Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur went. And so first the so-called Brahmanas, they spoke. And they basically said, they presented that one cannot be a Brahmana if one is not born in a Brahmana family. And they presented their arguments and all that. And then it was time for Saraswati Thakur to speak. So he spoke. First, he glorified the position of the Brahmanas. He said, Brahmanas they are so much necessary. There's, Krishna glorifies them. They're so much glorified. And they were very happy. The Brahmanas who hated the Vaishnavas, they were so happy. But then he started to give Shastric references, and he proved that one can only be a Brahmana if one has the guna and karma. And then he also proved Vaishnavism. And they were defeated. So in this way we can see Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, they did a very important service of establishing Krishna consciousness. Because at that time, the tide was very much against. You know, all these Prakriti Sahajiyas were very, very prominent. And even Prabhupada, he was criticized even by his own god brothers of giving initiation to Western devotees, because they were not born in Brahmana families, according to some of his god brothers. So we can see even Prabhupada was criticized for that thing. His spiritual master was criticized. Bhaktivinoda Thakur was criticized. So we can see how this mentality of I'm a Brahmana by birth or is very, very pervasive. And it can even affect our society, or it has affected our society also. So where one might have a Brahminical nature or tendency, and then one thinks, yes, you know, I'm a Brahmana, therefore I'm superior to the rest of the devotees. And they are meant to give me facility and protect me and, you know, whatever. And one can commit offenses because of that mentality. And here, you know, we've been, like, in text 41, it mentions that Shamika Rishi says, what a great sinful act was performed by my son. So, you know, Shamika Rishi is saying that. My son has committed a great sinful act. In other words, he has committed a great offense by unlawfully cursing Maharaj Parikshit. So this is what, through this pastime, this is something we have to be very mindful of, how we don't get carried away by our varnas. The main thing is Krishna consciousness, devotional service, and we all are devotees of the Lord, and we see each other as devotees, not as, you know, Vaishya, Shudra, Brahmana, Kshatriya. So though we have these tendencies, and we have to engage these tendencies in Krishna's service. So if whatever tendency we should be engaged according to our propensities, but the main thing is we engage in Krishna's service, and we see everyone as devotees and everyone is equal. And in Krishna's eyes, everyone is equal. So from Krishna's vision, you know, all these designations, they're temporary. Today we might be a Brahmana, tomorrow we might be a Vaishya, you know. So all these designations change. They change according to our association with the modes of nature. But the main thing is we are devotees. So I'll just leave it here. Are there any questions, comments? Yes, Prabhu.
In relationship to guna and karma, I would have thought that guna influences karma. If you have certain qualities or qualifications, then that will then be manifested in karma. What is the distinction between the two? And you know, is it possible to have the qualities of the karma that do not act as one?
So you're saying the guna influences the karma, and what is the distinction between the two?
But if you have the qualities of the Brahmana, then you should act like one. But is it possible to have to acquire the qualities of a particular Brahmana and then act in another way?
Generally, it's a good point. Guna influences karma, so one will be inclined to act in a certain way, but not necessarily one will act in a certain way. It could be by circumstances one cannot act.
Well, an example would be, extreme. He had the qualifications of a brahmana.
Yeah.
But he had the power of a curse.
Yeah.
But he wasn't behaving like a brahmana.
Yeah. In other words, he didn't have the culture.
So it is possible to, you know, acquire some of the qualities of a brahmana but still behave like a sutra.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, from this pastime, it's what we can understand. Yeah, that's a good point. Because Prabhupada does mention in the previous purports that yes, Sringi did have the brahminical power and the training also. It specifically mentions the training and the power. But he didn't mention the word qualities. Doesn't it? In the purport. He mentions training and power. So maybe he had some of the qualities, but not all of the qualities. So in some areas he was lacking, and therefore he didn't act in that way.
And now we might say in ourselves, we acquire some of the qualities of a brahmana. You know, we rise early in the morning, we do, you know, do brahminical activities. But the real test of that is in our karma and how we actually.
That's right.
How we act.
How we act, yeah. That's right. Yeah. Yeah.
That's not miracle.
Yeah. So circumstantially will be tested. Yeah. One point I forgot to mention was, which is in this verse, quite an important point, is that as Prabhupada mentions in the purport, that even if a king, a real kshatriya, is in the wrong, he still should not be cursed. So we can see, generally when in modern society, when leaders make mistakes, everyone, you know, criticizes them and fault finding. But a king is generally not meant to be criticized, even if he does something wrong. And Prabhupada gives the example of a surgeon. He's curing, operating on someone, and he kills him. Still not to be criticized, because his intention is right. His intention is to save that person. But he happened to die. But in the same way, if we see our leaders, their intention is right. And, you know, in this world, to err is human. Everyone makes mistakes. But if the intention of the leaders is to give Krishna consciousness, to protect the dependents, and even if they make a mistake, others should not criticize them unnecessarily. So, of course, the mistake can be addressed, but they should not be, as Prabhupada mentioned, they should not be criticized. Unless they, you know, deviate, you know, from the principles, and unless it's a very severe deviation. Yeah, that's right. Yes, bro.
So it seems like according to the desire of the acharyas, that we should work to reinstate the system of vanashram, this culture of vanashram, or in our case, dharma vanashram.
Yeah.
So how do you practically work towards that?
Yeah, and Prabhupada also said 50% of my work is done, the other 50% is to establish Varnashram. So the Acharyas and Srila Prabhupada, yes, Daivi Varnashram has to be established. And, you know, if we see in the temples, you will find, if we observe closely, Varnashram is there. If for example, if you see in a temple community, it's there. Though it's not made very obvious. But it is there. There are certain people who are, you know, acting as administrators. Then there are certain devotees who are in a more, you know, brahminical role. And these devotees with mercantile mentality. So if you look in a community, all these things are already there. And of course, Prabhupada also wanted us to establish like farm communities, where we can even showcase this more. And that's something where we have to, it's, I guess, work in progress. That's the challenge.
Would you say that education would be a key factor in facilitating such a vinyasa? Specifically in how an ashram is working, how people react, do work according to their nature?
Of course, yeah, we have to. Yeah, education is there. The importance of to speak about the importance of varnashram, living simply on depending on nature. Yeah, all those things are there. In fact, it's even the I think the GBC resolution: the 10% of every Bhagavatam class, the time should be devoted to speaking about varnashram.
The problem is that nobody really knows what varnashram means.
That's right. So that's
it's a huge issue.
Yeah, that's right.
Because, you know, we've got the Kshatriyas. Some of the ladies promoting Kshatriya Bhana at the moment, they're just radical. They want to support, you know, running the Muslims out of India. There's huge misunderstandings of what Varnashram
is. Yeah, that's right. That's true.
So, probably one of Varnashram colleges.
Hmm.
And,
in every temple.
When I was a teenager, we don't have it now, but there used to be high schools and technical high schools. And if you showed a propensity towards academic pursuits, then you went to the high school. But if you had the propensity of carpenter, you know, tradesman, metal workers, that you know, more the trades, what we would call the trades, then you went to the tech high school, and you would learn then technical trades.
Yeah.
So you know, even in modern day society, so-called modern day society, there is a consideration of the aptitudes of the person and training accordingly, engaging accordingly. So it's not that difficult to do. And as you say, we see that the engagement of devotees according to their propensities is basically varnashram.
Yeah. Yes, Suresh Prabhu also made that point that
without labeling people.
Yeah, that's important. Without labeling people, that's the right point. Yeah. Once you label, it creates a lot of problems.
So what would Varnashram society look like?
It just look like what we have here,
no?
More or less. Varnashrams, I guess, it will look like, you know, you're living on a rural community, and just like here, more or less, devotees are engaged according to their propensity, but no one is labeled.
No one is labeled. Yeah.
Yeah.
But there's a difference between varnashram and rural development.
Yeah, of course.
They're not necessarily dependent on varnashram. Has to be established in cities as well.
Mm.
It's not that you have to go and live in a rural setting to pursue varnashram.
That's why I said it's more or less even happening here, though it's not labeled. But if we observe closely, it's happening.
Mm-hmm.
So, varnashram can be at different places. It can be on a rural setting, or it can even be in the city. But the whole point is to, from what I understand, engage your nature in Krishna's service without being labeled as a certain designation.
Mm. Papa wanted us to live.
Yeah, he wants us to live on.
Closer to the source of production.
That's right.
That's a more natural, simple world.
Yeah.
Less complicated way of living.
Yeah. That's right.
That's what he wanted us to do.
Mm. And Prabhupada wanted those who want to preach, they live in the cities. And, temples are for preaching and there's a base. But others, he encouraged them to live on the land so they don't have to depend on so many artificial necessities. and they can have a simple life and save the time for hearing and chanting.
And the irony of all of that is, at the moment, if we were to have the devotees just go live on the land, it would be super expensive. We have to, unless we're prepared to go live in a bark hut and work fields and grow our own food and stuff, it's incredibly hard work. Mm. And then you need to be supported by the devotees collecting money in the city.
Yeah, it's quite a challenge. Yes, Prabhu.
It seems to me that there's this emergency work which involves preaching, and there's routine work where you actually live, in a rural community, and you live a Brahminical lifestyle, your life, that platform. And then in the cities where people are preaching, it seems that they are under a bit more pressure. Like in Mayapur, for example, it's really easy. You live in China, Krishna, you wake up, you go to Mayapur, it's all really simple. You try to apply that when you come to, well, for me personally, when you try to apply that when you come to Australia, it gets a little bit more difficult. The reason that we're here, in one sense, is to preach, to teach people about the benefits and the how much you can gain from living a simple lifestyle with high thinking. And I just want to bring up the point, it seems like there's two different aspects there.
Yeah, that's why Prabhupada wants devotees to live, especially grihasthas. That living on the land, and that itself is a big preaching. But it's not easy, easier said than done. So many devotees don't want to live there because they are... Sorry?
It's hard work.
It's hard work, and because so many are used to the comforts of a city.
Yes.
There's a toilet right inside your house. There's a supermarket right next door. And we are just addicted to the comforts. So, and even city is hard work, there's no doubt. Commuting to work, it's tough. Living in the city is tough. All your money gets chewed up. You don't have much money left. So you just pick, what kind of hard work you want. living there is hard work. You're dealing with nature. But I think that hard work is better than the city hard work. But someone has to pioneer and do the grassroots, and no one wants to do that. So it's easier said than done. And we need to attract more people who will be willing to, who like that kind of work. Farmers or people who like to live on the land, they'll probably do more than us if they become devotees. Because we have, in our whole life, we have lived in cities. And now for us to just go on the land and live, it's not very easy. In India, it's more successful because they can pay people to get so many things done. Because labor is cheap. And if you look in the farm and the Chowpatty one, Vada one, how they established was they paid people. Then devotees moved in there later. Our situation is much different. It's not easy, but that doesn't mean we don't try. We have to try and beg Radha Ballabha for the intelligence to do it. Yeah. Yes, Prabhuji.
You want to tell something about Vrindavan Das Thakur?
You can tell us, Prabhu. Vrindavan Das Thakur, he wrote a commentary on the... No. Vishwanath Chakravarti. Okay. I think we should end here. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki. Thank you.